Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thanks and welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. And we're ready to roll. And this episode, we're talking about hockey. And we're talking with our guest, the broadcaster for the Maine Mariners. Mike Keeley joins us. And Mike, a good friend of mine, obviously in our broadcasting circles. He has been the media relations and broadcast manager for the Maine Mariners since the team started back in 2018. He serves as the radio play-by-play voice of the team, in addition to handling most of the PR, communications, and media duties with the organization. That seems so familiar to me with my days with the Pirates. And I know that he wears a lot of hats, and he's wearing another one here today as a guest here on the podcast. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Greg, thanks for having me. Glad we could make this happen after, 6 months when it was first proposed. And you're a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. So glad, happy to take some time.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, I want to kind of start with your story. I do have a lot of athletes that I talk to that will be interested in the future of their career. And especially as an athlete, I always talk about broadcasting as an option because they know their sport really well. And I know from doing games, whether it's even just play-by-play or the color side, you know, there's opportunities there for athletes that really know the game. Obviously, your experience, going back over 10 years now, starting in D3 at SUNY Oswego, and then also receiving your BA in broadcasting from Oswego in 2013. Prior to Maine, obviously, you spent 4 years working at the NAHL with the Keystone Ice Miners in Pennsylvania, of course, and then the Austin Bruins in Austin, Minnesota. A lot of experience for you, and then including Announcer of the Year in 2017 with the Northwoods League Rochester Honkers, also in Minnesota. Talk to me about your broadcasting career and kind of how you got into it.
Yeah, for sure. When I became interested in sports, which was actually for me kind of a late blooming situation, I wasn't always like into sports from like, it wasn't one of those situations where I grew up and was, you know, playing sports right away. I became interested kind of gradually over time through my different friends, circles of friends. And played a little bit, but not a ton, but I really enjoyed watching sports and, found myself when watching on TV, taking an interest in the broadcasters. And that quickly morphed into, you know, muting the TV and calling the games on my own or calling my video games as I played them and things of that nature. And then, you know, as I moved into high school, realized, okay, this is something I could try to make a career out of. And my particular high school situation, there wasn't a lot of broadcasting opportunities. So I went the newspaper writing route and became sports editor of my high school newspaper. And then when it came time to choose a college, it was really important to me to find a good broadcasting program. And Oswego had one. It had alumni such as Steve Levy and Linda Cohn from ESPN. It had Al Roker, of course, of the Today Show. And he was actually a meteorology major, but his name was all over the TV station at Oswego. Steve Levy's name was on the press box. And so I went in knowing that didn't want to go too far from home. I'm originally from Rochester, New York. Oswego is about a little over an hour's drive. And, I knew they had a strong hockey program and I knew they had a strong broadcasting program and hoped those two things kind of married together was going to be a good situation and turned out to be a great one. And as you know, it's all about the timing in whatever situation you're in. And I came in 2009 at a time where the sports director was on his way out. He was the long time, I don't know, long time, but at least a 3 or 4 year play-by-play voice of the men's hockey team at Oswego. And there was kind of a situation where there was no clear replacement. And so I went in there and I went to both the general meetings for the student-run radio station and the TV station, and I just found better opportunities with the student-run radio station at the time. I originally auditioned, ironically, for the color commentary position, as you started off your question with, and then that quickly morphed into a chance to do play-by-play, and I was very fortunate that I had the opportunity to do basically all the home games as a freshman on the student-run radio station, WNYO. And then as the years went on, did more and more games. And basically by, you know, junior year, I was doing every game, became sports director of the radio station and put myself in a really good position coming out of Oswego with over 100 broadcasts under my belt at that point to go out into the real world and find a job. And then luckily had that opportunity with Keystone. And I could, you know, we could talk for an hour about the Keystone Ice Miners situation, because I dealt with a lot of adversity there, and it just wasn't a strong ownership group, and it wasn't a strong market for a junior hockey team. But because of those factors, I actually learned a ton, and it set me up well for my next job in Austin and then and now Maine. So that's kind of the abridged version of the story. And then that the award you mentioned, that was actually for a baseball team,
right?
The Rochester Honkers, a summer college baseball team in Minnesota that I was doing during the off season of the Austin Bruins season. So I was doing year round for those 2.5 years where I would do the Austin Bruins from October through April. And then I would do the Honkers from May through August. So that was definitely the busiest stretch I had when it came to basically year round broadcasting, but I've enjoyed every moment of it. I'm very passionate about play by play, and you know, whenever I throw the headset on, as you can relate to, Greg, definitely doesn't feel like work, feels like, you know, something that I'm blessed to be able to do, and looking forward to, you know, wherever my journey takes me next.
Yeah, no, it's funny you mentioned your background. It sounds eerily similar to mine as well. You know, it's all about timing. Like you said, I had a chance when I was at Quinnipiac, because I did some of my high school broadcasting, and, you know, you find it early enough, you find that, you know, bug in you, you can do some pretty powerful things with it. I did 2 years in my high school. That gave me the experience when I went to Quinnipiac timing. There was an assistant coach. He was doing the color. Really would have rather been kind of more involved in the coaching rather than doing the color. And he knew I was writing for a U.S. college hockey magazine at the time. He's like, Greg, do you want to do these games? And I'm like, do I want to do the games? Absolutely. And then I started with color, and then Bill Schweitzer, a longtime CBS broadcaster and voice of Quinnipiac, was like, you know, I'm going to have to pick up a lot more basketball games. And I said, okay. And he's like, that leaves you an opportunity to do hockey. And I was like, I would love to do that. And so I think a lesson, especially for any aspiring broadcasters out there, is to take that shot, right, Mike? You never know where it's going to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was stubborn in a way coming in, saying I want to do play-by-play. I was very one track. Honestly, though, I didn't know what sport. I knew baseball and hockey were the two sports of which I held the most knowledge, but I wanted to play-by-play. So when that initial color opportunity was there, because I hadn't played, and to your point, usually the color commentary is somebody that has a background in playing, but I knew I had enough knowledge of the sport, but I said, do I want, you know, this audition is for color commentary. That's not what I want to do. But I remember consulting with my parents at the time, and they were like, well, this is your chance to get your foot in the door, so just do it. And it was literally the following week that I was then auditioning for play-by-play. So
yeah,
that point was made very quickly that, you know, you take the chance and eventually it'll work out. And I was lucky that it didn't take very long at all.
Yeah, similar situation to mine as well. Is like, I think also the other thing it does, even if you are as a play-by-play guy, or you want to be a play-by-play guy, I think it's really helpful to do color. Mm-hmm. Because you start to learn about the idiosyncrasies involved in the timing. How long do I talk for? When do I toss it back? How do I describe a play? If we're in the offensive zone, do I need to talk too much? Should I be talking more when it's in the defensive zone, so I don't blow up the opportunity for the play-by-play guy, yep, you know, to have the good call? So there's a lot of things that you can learn even just doing color to actually benefit you doing your play-by-play. I enjoy doing games with Jeff Mannix. You know, when we do the high school stuff, we'll switch off, we'll do play-by-play and color, and it kind of takes me back to those roots. And it's just such a great chance to be able to, you know, just broadcast, and you're really doing somebody a public service, you know, to bring them the game the way that you would want to watch it and experience it.
Yeah, I mean, especially too, because it prepares you for then doing games on your own when you're basically the play-by-play and color
and
guy.
Yeah, the color guy.
So, I mean, and then that's the case through, you know, coming up through juniors, that was the case. There would be a game here and there where, like when I was in Austin, one of the local sports radio hosts would come and do color commentary for a few games. And, you know, with the Mariners, I've had a few games with a partner, but, you know, and all throughout college I did. So I was spoiled. But then when you go out and, you know, got my first job in juniors and you're doing all the games by yourself, you know, having the ability to be your own color commentator, for lack of a better term, is invaluable.
Well, I think another opportunity when I think about athlete branding, and I remember doing this when I was with the Pirates, is, you know, we would have injured players, you know, come up and they would fill in as color guys because they knew the team. They knew, you know, the dynamics. They knew the power play well. You know, they could talk about some of the things that the team had been working on. I remember working with Nolan Yonkman, who was a longtime Pirates player. He was so good at color. Like, he easily had a career in being a color commentator. And then you have others, Mike, that you're like, whoa, this isn't working out the way I thought it was going to, or, you know, they don't have that experience. And so then they're talking like for 2 minutes and you're like, okay, pump the brakes.
Yeah, no, it's funny too, because I've had that situation a few times here with the Mariners. Brian Hart did a couple of games year one, and then Lewis Zerter-Gostage, well, he was on the shelf last year, and both of them did a tremendous job. And, you know, they were also both really engaged where they were asking me for feedback and saying, you know, am I doing this right? You know, am I jumping in at the right times, et cetera. And, you know, they both wanted to come back and do more games. So, you know, whenever they had those, that attitude, it's always helpful. But, and also our current captain for the Mariners, Connor Doherty, he's got a great broadcasting voice. Mm-hmm. And I had him on the coaches show. Shout out to the Mariners coaches show, every month or once a month on Tuesdays, down at $3 Dewey's. 6 to 7 p.m. But we had him on the first show, and he was, you know, I asked him, I was like, has anyone told you before that you should get into broadcasting when you're done playing? Because your voice is just made for it. And he had told me he had been. So, but yeah, I mean, the guy, you know, the players have the knowledge, that insight that they bring from having actually played and being in all the situations that arise during the course of a game, is so helpful. And for a lot of them, it's just a matter of learning how to properly convey, you know, those thoughts over the air. And that's how you get, you know, the good ones like Eddie Olczyk and Darren Pang and all Ray Ferraro, just all the great ones in the broadcasting NHL right now. They just have that great combination of the knowledge and the ability to appropriately convey it on the air.
And I think too, the chemistry too, that's so important, is to have that chemistry work together for a little bit. I wanted to talk about your career. Kind of, who has been your mentor? Or you mentioned a lot of great names, obviously. Who did you see kind of growing up, or who do you see yourself kind of having as a mentor, or somebody that you looked up to in the booth?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been of the mind to try to take different aspects from as many broadcasters as possible to create your own style, because I think it's definitely a mistake to try to emulate one single broadcaster. And coming up, I mean, I listened to a lot of Rick Jenneret from the Buffalo Sabres, growing up as a Sabres fan, still following them closely to this day. So I think a lot of his style, you can hear in my call, you know, kind of the held out score call that I have kind of comes from him, and even some of just the little phrases. I was a big fan of Dave Strader, may he rest in peace whose name is on the press box in Glens Falls. And I thought he was just tremendous in just his cadence and, you know, his listenability, where you just, you know, he came off as very likable. You know, obviously I'm fortunate to follow so many great names here in the Frank Fixaris Memorial press box, including Frank himself. You yourself, Greg, and then obviously Doc Emmerich, Joe Beninati, Dale Arnold, Tom Caron. It's just amazing the lineage that has come through this press box. And I've always been a huge fan of Joe Beninati as well, going back to his days when he was on Versus, obviously behind Doc, kind of as the number two. And you know, all those guys I've reached out to, and they've been nice enough to provide feedback. It's been awesome. But So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's one specific person. I think also I've listened to a ton of Pat Hughes on Chicago Cubs radio on the baseball side. I was just thinking about all the drives I've taken across the country. When I lived in Minnesota for those 3 years, I would drive all the way home to Rochester, New York for usually once at the beginning of the summer and once at the end of the summer. And so that was like a 2-day drive. I would stay over halfway in Indiana, but a lot of the times the Cubs would play those afternoon games. And so I would just be listening to Pat Hughes. And even though he does baseball and I do primarily hockey, I think I picked up on a lot of the ways he's just so good at painting the picture, which is obviously a different animal in baseball. And then it's hockey, there's less movement and you kind of have to be a little more descriptive of everything in baseball, and hockey is, you know, the action kind of helps speak for itself. But so I think it's that in a lot of ways it's subconscious, where you listen enough and you automatically pick up on some of the things. But just a lot of great voices. Nobody that I would say like necessarily a mentor in the fact that I've, you know, I interned under them or something like that. There's just a lot of voices I listened to. I did have the chance when I was in college to shadow Don Stevens, the voice of the Rochester Amherst, who is still there to this day. And he is definitely a master at his craft and so passionate about it. And definitely a lot. I try to take something from every broadcaster I listen to and the ones that I'm fortunate enough to meet.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I like what you said too, talking about meeting people. I think that, you know, networking is so important when you become a broadcaster. You become part of this fraternity almost in a way where there are so many other people like you. We're all trying to do the same job. And I remember, you know, being a Pirates broadcaster my first year, thinking to myself, which was naive of me. I mean, I came out of Quinnipiac and I'm like doing games, and I had never... At the college level, you don't have somebody you're comparing notes with. You're lucky if there's anybody there broadcasting the games. Like, right. You know, so usually it's just you. So I remember kind of having this mindset my first few games, you know, like, oh, there's the visiting broadcaster. And, you know, I don't want to share too much, or I don't want to, you know, it was just this competitive, you know, kind of juices. And then I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. I'm like, this could actually be really beneficial, because they would come up to me and they'd be like, oh, how's the team doing? And then I was like, oh, this is the culture. Yeah, we can actually share notes. And now we're both going to sound a lot better. That was something that happened early on for me. And I know that it really worked out well, in the sense that you start to build relationships with a lot of the guys that are from the visiting team or from the media that, you know, cover the team. Talk to me about the value of networking, you know, as a broadcaster in your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and obviously it's the most important thing you can do in any industry, I think, at this point. You know, that old saying about it's more about who you know than what you know. And I think that is so true. But it's funny because, you know, it's hard to not think long term, where you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be competing against these guys for jobs someday. But the reality is, you know, you want to make allies with them, because then when they're in a position to help you out, when they're at a higher level, they could be in a position to help you out. I mean, I've had friends go on and get jobs at the next level. And, you know, I if I'm competing with them for the same job and I get turned down, I always try to send the decision maker in the direction of my friend, because you never know when that favor can get paid back someday. So that's a huge part of it. But there's definitely camaraderie. You know, I've really enjoyed everybody that I've gotten to work with here in the ECHL and even the NHL before it, where, you know, if for no other reason, everyone can relate to one another. And when it comes to all the different struggles of, you know, the fatigue you get from being on the road for long periods of time, or the challenges that come with communicating with coaches sometimes, or, you know, being the middleman between the hockey operations and the front office, and, you know, all the different little stressors of wearing all those hats that you talked about. It's nice to have somebody that can empathize with all of those situations. But I think when it comes to networking, it's a matter of, you know, being able to help one another out when you're in a position to do so. And then also, you know, once you create that network, you hear about job leads a lot quicker. It's almost like an underground network of a job search, where you don't need necessarily go on Teamwork Online or, you know, some of the other websites that will post those jobs publicly. You'll hear about them before they ever go up, because you've built a nice network of people that you trust and that trust you, that we're all kind of looking out for one another and we want to see each other succeed.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I think that one of the things when I was wearing those hats, I remember working with the players quite a bit. And of course, they all have their own different personalities. You know, some good, some bad, some shy, some way too outgoing. But the idea is that, you know, when I talk with athletes about athlete branding, that's a huge opportunity to get to know the broadcaster for the team, because you're going to build that relationship where you're going to get more interviews. You're going to have more chances to be talked to, get your career out, to get your name out there. And I think it's so important that athletes remember that there's a microphone in front of us, you know, and if they want to grow their career, share information, be personable, and allow the broadcaster, allow the people that we're going to talk to on the air to get to know them. And that's what I've started to do with athletes by building a profile of over 100 questions about an athlete. And I know from being a broadcaster, I would use that information in a heartbeat. And I think you'd probably say the same thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I always, at the beginning of the season, I, you know, when we have our first meetings and everyone's introducing themselves, you know, I always say, hey, I'm going to come to you guys throughout the year with, you know, requests from local media, and then even just internally from myself for my radio broadcast intermission content. And, you know, I appreciate your guys' willingness to give us information. And, you know, the good thing is at this level, guys, most of them have come up through junior hockey or college hockey, where they're pretty polished and they're used to going through the you know, everything that comes with talking to the media and giving interviews. And it's a lot harder when you're working in juniors and you're dealing with 16 to 20 year olds, and a lot of them are, you know, very shy, and they're not sure how to handle those situations. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely guys come to realize that they can market themselves, and especially in the ECHL, where, you know, you're in that league where you're a lot of guys are just getting their career started, or they're in a spot where they're trying to get noticed, trying to earn an AHL call up, because the ECHL is such a unique league where you could be on a Maine Mariners contract. You can get called up to any team in the AHL. It doesn't have to just be the Providence Bruins. You can get loaned to Springfield or Utica or Lehigh Valley, or, and we're in a very good geographic spot where there's a lot of teams just in a few hours drive. Bridgeport is another one. So, you know, players in our league are in a very unique spot where, you know, they have an opportunity to get noticed. But yeah, I mean, I think the player broadcaster relationship is really important. Another situation where you really have to build up a lot of trust, because, you know, you're, you know, broadcasting to hundreds of people every game. And, you know, you don't want to say something that the player, you know, doesn't want disclosed about themselves. So, yeah, it's something I've always tried to keep good relationships. And, you know, at the end of the day, if they miss out on a goal or an assist, I'm the one that's going to fix it for them. So they also, they also know that they want to stay on my good side too.
I can appreciate that. And too, the other thing too, I mean, obviously getting to know their personalities through all those hats you wear with community service appearances and asking them for requests and, hey, can you sign this autograph for this kid? Or, hey, you know, we've got this youth hockey group coming tonight. All those types of things matter. And it's really an opportunity for that athlete, that player, to build their brand.
Yeah. I know our marketing manager, Natalie, did a great job this year of a preseason survey, kind of like you just mentioned, to get the comfort level of our players and find out, you know, this different situations they're comfortable in and out in the community and, you know, working with animals or, you know, things like that. And, you know, again, we're very fortunate with such a great group of guys that are so open to just about everything. I mean, I just think about this past weekend, we suffered two tough losses to Newfoundland, but the guys went and did a full team autograph session for the fans right after the game. And they were so respectful and just so happy to have, you know, interaction with the fans, which is something didn't have the luxury to do last year with all the COVID protocols. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity, for the players, and especially in a great community here in Maine, where the people are so, they embrace the team so much, and they, as they have throughout the first two franchises that played here. So, yeah, it's been great.
Well, it's been great to have you on and talk about it because, of course, when there wasn't hockey here, we heard a lot about it. You know what I mean? So I also am very grateful that you've been able to help the Mariners to be so successful in the way that you guys have grown the franchise. So and I also think, you know, you deserve a lot of credit for coming in and doing that because, you know, it takes somebody like yourself to want to be able to get the team name out there, get the players out there, communicate all the messages from marketing and everything else. I know it takes a village. So I wanted to say thank you and congrats on all the work you guys have done.
Yeah, much appreciated. I mean, it means a lot coming from you, Greg, who's someone that really understands, you know, how much hockey means to this community. And it's like I said right before we started recording, it definitely a process, you know, getting the fans educated to what the ECHL was. I mean, they were used to the AHL for so many decades, and understandably there was some reluctance to embrace a lower level, even though it was just one level down. But I think now at this point, now as we move into our fourth season, people have been to games, they realize the great level of hockey that the ECHL is and how much has improved over the years from even 10 years ago where it was, and the amount of prospects and legitimate draft picks and players that are going to go on and play for the Bruins or other NHL teams in the very near future. So it's been great to watch the city of Portland rally around this team toward the end of last year as we made our playoff run, and now into this season, and hopefully the momentum will continue.
Absolutely. I want to give people a chance to be able to get in touch with you or the Mariners. What are some of the best ways that people can, you know, follow the Mariners or get in touch with you?
Yeah. So we're very active on social media, primarily Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mariners of Maine on all three. MarinersofMaine.com is our website. You can find me on Twitter at Keely Mike. That is KeeleyMike. Those are pretty much the touch points, and appreciate you plugging that for us.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to get down to $3 Dewey's. I gotta see these interviews you guys do. I'm sure that's a good time. So
it is. Yeah, we got one coming up this 2 days. So if you're around,
see you there. There you go. Funny enough, I'll be heading out to Minnesota, your old stomping grounds. I got some athletes I'm working with out there, so it should be exciting. But this was great. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing this level of expertise, sharing the broadcaster's perspective. I talk about it a lot, but it's nice when someone else obviously can emphasize things, especially to these athletes that are listening on how to grow their brand or what they want to do in the future of their career. Broadcasting is certainly an opportunity. So thanks again for everything you do. And thanks for coming on the podcast, and keep up the great work.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Greg, and look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. That is Mike Keely. I'm Greg Glenn. We're glad you could tune in, and stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.